Welcome to the Presentation Podcast, episode 110. Here is another Design Studio conversation about presentation design and the business of presentation. Let's start another presentation conversation. Here are the show hosts, Troy Caller, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
I'm Troy Caller with TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
Hey guys, three of us getting together. We got a great topic. It is very geeky. But before we go there, how about what's happening in studios and business for you?
Troy, you go first. I know you're busy.
Yeah.
hard to find time to record. You're busy. You're getting up super early to make this happen.
You know, I used to travel to like out to New York and say hi to you, Nolan, when I was out there, you know, and I used to travel to wherever it was, you know, we'd travel to where the events are. What's really making it, I mean, it's good, but it's bad. You know, a meeting still happens on the East Coast with the executives. I'm just still here on the West Coast. So yesterday I was up at 3:30 in the morning to be online to, you know, monitor an online conference and take care of the virtual staging. And it's a little bit rough, you know.
Just a little secret. Troy's been up this morning already since what 3:30, 4:30?
Today I slept in. I was up at 5.
Oh my gosh. Oh, man.
Yeah, we have so let's hear this is Tuesday when everybody's hearing this. So we have just, well, you know, our latest virtual event, 1500 people at a very robust heart surgeon conference. Like, it's a really, really cool conference. It was complete with live stream heart surgeries, like real surgeries going on for physicians to learn from physicians. Yeah. Now, this is actually our seventh year being involved in this particular event, and they've always done this. That's one of the cornerstones. They actually send video crews around the world to hospitals so that doctors can see procedures that aren't like FDA approved for here in the US. It was a little disconcerting a number of years ago to walk in and go, patient on the hospital bed on the monitor, that's live.
Wait a minute. So, like, you know, we go to design conferences and people do demos and they open up their laptop and this is the equivalent of it, right?
Right. This is pretty much it's literally a demo of how to use particular heart stents and all kinds of stuff. It is absolutely fascinating. This is also, they specialize in pediatric. So I get to work with literally some of the nicest, most compassionate people in the world are heart surgeons that focus on children.
Pediatric. And the patient has to wait for their cue, basically. Basically for their time slot.
I could say a lot more. Nothing has ever gone bad. It's actually a very coveted thing because, you know, if you're live to an audience of 2,500 other physicians, the surgeon is pretty much on cue. Make sure nothing goes wrong. It would be a coveted place. Okay, so it's 1,500 people attended this event. We did a ton of the event design work, multiple tons of conference organization. I mean, we basically became the logistics and meeting planning arm of it. There's virtual exhibitor booths that we had to help with all the setup and coordinating, presentation studios for over 100 presenters. I'm literally exhausted at this point. And no time for that because we're on to the next project. Lori and the design team are doing an amazing project with Toyota where we're not only developing the executive presentations, but it all goes into this like sports center inspired virtual design set. So it's super, super amazing, great design work.
When is that going to be, Troy?
That is a private event internal to, you know, the executive team or the, you know, division of Toyota. So it'll happen this week, actually. Lori's today, while we're recording, Lori's up on a soundstage in LA and they're doing a socially distanced recording for one of the executives that can't be available during the actual meeting slot.
I'd love to see it. I mean, I know you can't, but
I will try and get some, hopefully Lori's going to get some pictures and stuff of the event. You know, we'll have pictures of the, you know, the screen capture of the actual virtual event, but being on a big soundstage is always a fun place to be for us. Not your normal PowerPoint stuff, but we do it. what else? I mean, I could just go on. We did this PowerPoint template and presentation forecasting the rollout of like gamer games for the next 5 years. That was really cool to look at. I'm not a gamer, but it was kind of fun to look at all the titles and predictions for the future. Can't share that one either. Sorry.
Like what the future of gaming is going to look like?
No. It's literally like, here's what the companies have rolled out. You know, when you know, movies are really hard right now because, you know, their rollout plans are pretty much disrupted.
Their pipeline basically of what they're.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it was also a forecast of where the trends would go. So this is why they're going in this. This is why they've taken this title and moved it. You know, they're forecasting it to be a, you know, 5 years out because of the trends and some of the stuff. It was fun. It's fun to be able to look down and go, hey, that's like characters I recognize. I don't want to say any names. And of course we did medical charts and slides and, you know, a million of those since our last episode. So this is kind of going into the geeky realm, but I'll just end on this one. I've been working with a few consultants to understand Amazon Web Services, where we now are running all of our virtual meeting platform builds. So way geeky, way technical stuff. And, you know, I thought web hosting was kind of web hosting. Not so. There's like 900 variables when you get into the Amazon world. So we're hiring in consultants. How about you guys? What are you guys up to?
I just finished up a bunch of print projects, including a newsletter design that had a print run of 850,000. So that was the biggest I've ever done. Unfortunately, yeah. I had an old school print designer I was working with who held my hand and made sure. I mean, just wanted to make sure that it was going to go right. But I'm starting a really exciting set of presentations for a new client. I'm really, really excited about this. This person, trying not to say too much, but is one of the world's leading astrophysicists who discovers new planets. They're a MacArthur Genius Awardee, a TED Talk favorite, and a professor at a major university. And so we're putting together a whole look, a sort of a branded look for them to present, whether they're presenting to other scientists or to the general public. And I'm diving in today, like probably right after I get off on the podcast, and it's really, really cool. So I'm really looking forward to that.
That's another one I hope can be shared. I mean, I know not, you know,
well, eventually, from a design standpoint. A lot of the talks will be public eventually. So when that happens, I'll let you know.
If you can. Yeah, that's cool.
When there's a TED talk, Nolan can go, those are my slides.
Those are mine. Exactly. My son-in-law.
Did everyone know? Hopefully they won't do that thing where they replace the designers.
I've heard, you know, of that.
Images, that's disappointing because Ted will look at him like, I don't think we can use that image or that. We'll just redesign it ourselves. And you're like, yeah. Sandy, what are you doing?
Well, let's see. I just finished up creating a self-running pitch presentation for a screenplay for an animated movie. That was really, really fun. Something I've never done before. I've been working on it for quite a while. Of course, it's like you. That's something I can't share until maybe it's a movie someday, right?
That's cool.
Yep. Starting work on keynotes, several keynotes for varying clients, and a new business pitch. I haven't done a new business pitch for a client for a long time. You know, when it's high stakes, I have a lot of respect for those companies who realize we shouldn't be doing this ourselves. So I'm excited to dive into that, actually. And on a personal note, I signed up for Swedish classes.
I thought you already spoke. I thought you already spoke Swedish.
I do.
No, Nolan. This is Swedish cultural dance class.
Yeah, right. But it's not what is it called? A Shottish. No. It is language. I have been fluent in Swedish. I've lived there, right? And if all works out, we plan on going back next year. And I just want to be up on top of it. So.
Can you say something? Can you say welcome to the presentation podcast?
Sure. Välkommen till the presentation podcast. Vi är glädja att ni är här.
That
was awesome.
No, but the Swedes listening are going, what the heck? That was a heavy accent, American accent. So funny. So how about news? Let's talk about news in the worlds of presentation.
All right. Well, our old friend Jamie Garak has a new little blog post through Bright Carbon, which he works for, about how to save out the QAT on the Mac. So that one of the deficiencies of the QAT on the Mac is that you can't save it out and re-import it and share it and everything the way you can on the PC. But he found where the files are buried, and we're going to put the link into the show notes. But on so this is a blog post on Bright Carbon about how to essentially save out your QAT and then
have you tried it
from different computers? I have tried it, and he also offers his version of the QAT for the Mac, the starter set, and I imported theirs and then continued to edit it, to make it my own. So I don't use the QAT on the Mac as much as the PC for a number of reasons, but I'm determined to do more with it.
Give it a go anyway. I mean, yeah.
Wow,
that's amazing.
That's a great thing.
That's amazing. Well, okay, so I'm excited about the white paper. I might have mentioned several episodes ago that the Presentation Guild was holding a think tank where we pulled in several industry leaders to sit down and have a discussion about the future of presentations in a virtual world. And that white paper that came out of that was published last week. So if you go to the website, I will put the link in the notes so that you can check it out and download the white paper. It's free to all. If you're logged in.
Oh, it is.
Yes,
it is. I did not know that.
Yep, it's free to all. But if you're logged in as the...
Just got to give your email address, right, if you're not...
Actually, I think members don't have to anymore. I think, yeah, because then we're just doubling up. But if you are logged in as a member, you'll actually see snippets from the Think Tank panel discussion. So in real time, you'll get to listen to... many of our panel members. It's really fun. And just a little heads up, we're going to feature a podcast episode that will feature the discussion and the results when we host guest Yulia Barnikova, who facilitated the discussion. So everyone stay tuned for that.
Nice. I've read it and it's very good.
Good.
Speaking of other articles and things on the web, the best article on choosing colors for data viz that I've ever read happened. Somebody wrote Lisa Charlotte Roast on Data Wrapper wrote just an amazing article. Now she's written before about color theory and things like that, but she wrote this article, How to Pick More Beautiful Colors for Your Data Visualizations. It also applies to presentation. We're going to put the link in there. A lot of people have been talking about it. It should be required reading for designers and certainly data visualizers and presentation designers. So it's just a really wonderful article.
Yeah, I'm glad you shared it. It is awesome. It's first of all, the visualizations are great, but this is a great primer on color use and just a lot of the basics of design, color theory design.
And it starts to get a little deep, but it's still very practical and gives you lots of links for online tools and things and lots of examples, as you said, about, you know, why you don't want to use bright green and bright red and how just a few adjustments to the color itself can sort of change everything and just make them really work.
Awesome. Well, like my lack of sleep, I have a lack of presentation industry news. So if you don't mind, we're going to jump into our conversation. PowerPoint has hundreds, if not thousands, of functions and features that are accessed from the ribbon, from panels, pop-up dialog boxes, right clicks. Sometimes they're hidden with the control alt clicks. Today, we're focused on the backstage. This is another place where PowerPoint shows its customizable nature, kind of its smooth interface of hiding and keeping all the behind-the-scenes logistics stuff in its own place. All those areas where you go to when you're clicking the file button in the upper left-hand corner. Today, we're going to dive really deep into PowerPoint and talk about all there is to know about the backstage, or as much as we can get in the next 40 minutes. We should note this is primarily a PC-centric episode, as the Mac doesn't quite have the same backstage experience, but we will talk about the Mac towards the end of the conversation. Nolan's been nice to kind of wrangle up a kind of a summary of everything there. For this one, you may want to have your computer on and PowerPoint open. I know each of us have PowerPoint open, and this is going to get real geeky really fast.
So let's just start though, high level. What is the backstage, and we'll get you there. So follow along, unless you're driving. In these days, a lot of people aren't. They're really at their computer. So I feel pretty safe about you out there. But in general, starting with an overview, let's just take a look at the start pane, and I'm going to give you a clockwise scenario of what you're looking at. At the top is the title pane. That's just the very, very top of the screen you're looking at. Right below that, you're seeing the new pane. And we're going to get into detail on what that is in just a second. Below that, where the search bar starts, that's the search pane or search area. Then, if you skip over to the far left of your screen, there's a bar that goes from top to bottom. And that is divided into tabs of the backstage view. It's a list of tabs where you'll see home, new, open, save, save as. And we're going to get into that in just a second.
Okay. So you've got this sort of side panel with home, new, and all that stuff. Let's start going down those. The very first one, which you get kicked into right away when you hit file from the normal view, is you go to home. And first we've got a strip of presentations, sort of starter presentations, including...
Wait. Above that is the whole thing you guys just talked about before our recording here, which I had never seen. Mine says good morning. What do you guys see?
Oh, I've got good morning, even though it is 11:56 a.m. here. I don't know if in 4 minutes it's gonna kick over to good afternoon.
Come back to it. I've never actually seen this until you guys said, what does yours say? I was like, what do you mean, what does it say? So yeah, a little personalization. Good morning. Huh.
Yep. And that's also where it says title and write the title of your presentation.
I got to check back at that thing. So if it's like 1 a.m, like it was last night, and I'm still working, does it say stop, go to bed up there?
So you've got a couple of starter themes. You can get a lot more, which we'll cover as well with more themes. But underneath that, you've got a search bar. Oh, by the way, that strip at the top can be collapsed if you want, if you just don't want to see it. So if you're not
seeing it.
And
that's a sticky. I didn't know what you're talking about, because mine just says it has blank presentation as the only thing there. It's the only thing I see. And it works it's actually a button that opens a blank. I must have collapsed that, I don't know, years ago, because I don't really leverage a lot of the Microsoft assets. So just side note, that's collapsible and it'll stay collapsed unless somebody tells you, hey, it's there.
So below, you've got a search bar where you can search for all sorts of presentations that you previously worked on your computer or on OneDrive, all over the place. But underneath there, you've got three categories: recent, pretty self-explanatory, pinned. Again, kind of self-explanatory. You can pin presentations. And the third one is shared with me, which I find kind of odd. This is going to show presentations that people have invited to you as a collaborator, but also apparently, because I have none of those types of presentations, none of my clients, you know, use SharePoint and add me. But it shows all the presentations that clients have emailed me recently, which I find very odd, because that's just simply a file on my computer. And so I don't really use this recent pin shared with me personally.
I have never used it, but now that I know the email attachments that are there, which they are, I'm opening it right now. I'm going, that client sent me that. We have not put it on our SharePoint drive. Wow.
So anyway, there's that. You can choose to navigate there if you don't want to go to, you know, Windows Explorer or your own computer. Actually, sometimes I do use recent. That's not true, to see what, you know, try to find that file I worked on yesterday. But at the top right, you've got more themes. So we've got this strip of themes. If you click more themes, you're actually going to be taken to the next category on our sidebar, which is new. Now, at the top, you've got a couple of sort of basic ones. You've got blank presentation. It gives you urban and Madison. But now below that, you're going to get a whole bunch of other Microsoft Office themes, right? That's the first category. You can have Office, or you can have custom, which we'll get to in a second. Again, you have a search, because you've got some sort of suggested searches like presentations, themes, education. The ones that show up, it looks like, I don't know, maybe like 20 or so show up initially, but Microsoft actually has many, many, many more. So like if you type in science, for example, I'm just going to type that in. It's going to give me, looks like a dozen, 10 or 12 other Microsoft Office themes that could be used. So don't think that like those 20 are the only ones available. You can keep searching. And I honestly don't know if there's a way to see every single Microsoft Office theme without keywords. But also under here, there, you just take a note of the first couple ones because they're actually not themes to start with. The first one is Quick Starter. I don't know if we've ever talked about this feature. This is a feature that almost nobody knows about. And don't tell your kids about it because they're going to start using this to write book reports. I'm not going to go into it. Maybe we should talk about it in a different episode. But it allows you to basically outline a presentation kind of automatically. And it's very controversial because it kind of, if a student is using it, it kind of does a lot of the work for them. But that's an option there you can explore. Then you've got like a welcome to PowerPoint and a special presentation on how to use 3D. So Microsoft sort of dumps some other things there.
Yeah, those are good little starter elements. But
good starter elements. But I did want to call something out in the new bar.
Yeah.
I think that isn't the same for everyone. I do have a blank presentation, but you mentioned something else. Instead of that, I have World Country Report presentation.
Oh, that's because you've clicked on that. I think it's sort of your most recent ones.
You're right.
And mine says blank and nothing else because I don't know the last time I've opened up a Microsoft theme, but these are actually really nice looking.
There's some really nice ones you think they're just sort of the ugly, gross ones, but they're a lot. And I wish there was like a comprehensive list somewhere. Then also, so that shows office themes. And then there's also a tab for custom, where if you've saved custom office templates or document themes on your computer or share drive, you can access those there.
And that is a conversation that we could go down. That's a rabbit hole.
Yeah,
because every time you try to do corporate templates, it doesn't work the way we want. But anyways, let's move on to the next one. Oh, wait, I'm covering the next
one.
So
moving down the
next one. Yeah, I am. The category is open, where you can again navigate to recent presentations, you know, your recent local folders. It also has a OneDrive and SharePoint sites. And so it's kind of similar to the home. I mean, home button, we talked about it has an aggregation. I very rarely use the home button. I just jump right to open because I like it's pinned the way it has the pinned files organized. And we have a collection of, let's see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, about 14 presentations that we have on everybody's computer across the company. So we have this base set of information that's just there. So we use pinned files quite a bit. Then it'll say, but the today, the like kind of the recent one, it goes much deeper than the home. So I'm looking at this and it literally is saying this week,
yesterday,
last week.
Yep.
It can't be covering all of them because there's not more than 50 files here. And I open up 50 files in a day. I don't know how it decides to keep them in your recent, but I find this one a little bit more robust. We've been using OneDrive quite a bit. Actually, it's Teams, but it's listed as OneDrive here. And I've been using OneDrive, and this is how I access my OneDrive folder here quite a bit. There's all the other elements there. You can add other places, but open has become a little bit more robust. And I do make use of that search bar that's kind of on the far right-hand side at the top. It's pretty good at finding things. If you can remember a keyword, you can find a presentation because it has a good long-term memory.
So I don't use that often. I have used on the very, very bottom of the list of files is you recover unsaved presentations. I think that has helped me once at least.
That's an important one.
Yes.
I've never used it that way. Wow.
There is that. And then there's also, I add Dropbox. I've added Dropbox as one of my locations.
Yep. Yep. There's another one you can do. You can do the add a place thing has a lot of options. Mm-hmm. I wish it would expand a little bit more, but it's definitely an option that a lot of people are using now.
Definitely. Okay, so let's see. Next, we have the info. Right under open is info. So if you push on that one, push that tab, it's kind of interesting. You have protect the presentation, and that allows you to. And I never use this. I don't know if you guys.
I don't either.
I don't either.
I mean, seriously, you can click on it, listeners, but we never use them.
You can put a password. People should know that you can put a password on a PowerPoint file. And so that's.
You can also work around a password by just doing a quick internet search. But it's not that robust.
Yeah, you can set it to read only.
Read only or mark as final. When that first came out, people were using that and it would really mess people out up because, oh my gosh.
Final version 8.
Exactly. This is the final version 3.
I love check for issues where you can inspect the document, check for accessibility and compatibility. Troy, I know you use this a lot.
This is a part of our presentation prep. We actually, we use this on every file before we send it out.
So when you inspect the document, I don't know how much we should go into this, but you can check to see if you want, if you have comments in your document what the properties are and the personal information, because you may not want any, you don't want people to know that you created that file.
You know, I'll talk when you get over to the properties on the far right, I'll bring up the inspector again.
Okay. Awesome. So let's just move on there. Let's see what else is there. There's the version history, and I have not been able to leverage that. I think it could be really a good tool, but I
know you have to turn this on and it works with OneDrive, right?
I actually never use it here. I don't even think I really acknowledged it was here, because all presentations, as long as you're in an Office 365, they kind of have what I'm calling the second backstage. It's the drop down on the file name. Can't get to when you're in backstage, but when you're out front, every file name now has a little drop down arrow, and version history is there. And you know what? This button does the exact same thing, and it's a whole lot bigger. But it must be turned on for any files that are Office 365 based. So, because when you click it, it says, do you want to use, for me, it says, do I want to use, well, which of my OneDrives, my personal one, my corporate one, or my company one? So it's using version history based on shared web hosted files. So maybe when you say you have to turn it on, Nolan, it's because you're not on a corporate level Office 365, where it's just kind of like, I think it's automatically turned on. It's a cool feature. I actually just used it yesterday because I, one of the downsides of all this, this is a tangent. one of the downsides of all this, shared files and hosted on servers, is you open it up, there's no save or save as, which we're probably going to cover next. Mm-hmm. But, as soon as you start typing, it automatically starts saving it. I was about 10 minutes into updating a document and I realized, I'm updating it based, because I was just updating and then going to do a save as, but it actually saved all those changes into it. So I used the version history to go recover. I first did a save as, or a save a copy, and I made the document where it should be. And then in the original one, I use version history to go back, copy all the old slides out and put them back in. So I do use it, but that's kind of only used it because the new world kind of got me.
Okay. I think I know it's available in Google Slides, and I've used it, and it's easy to use in Google Slides. So I'll have to become more familiar with that. Okay. And then the final tab option under, this category under info is recover unsaved presentations again, and then delete all unsaved presentations. That sounds scary to me. So
mine says I have no unsaved changes. So apparently I don't have any managed presentation. I don't know what to call them. I don't have any presentations that have crashed on me lately.
Okay. I'll check to mine, that out.
It says I have none. What does yours say under managed presentation?
I've got two auto recoveries from today and yesterday, I don't recall them crashing. So I don't understand.
So over on the right side though, the properties is where I really am into it. I live by this a lot. What do you guys see? What do you have to say there?
Not too much, but this is about as much information that PowerPoint will give you on a slide, right? If you're not using SlideWise, which we talked about.
SlideWise is changing.
But it'll tell you, slides and size, and you can put in tags here, I guess.
Yeah, you have to click the, I got to do a show. At the very bottom, it says show all properties. Highly encourage everybody to do that, because there are some things in there that you may not want to go out. I have a really funny story about this. So we always look at our files.
And I didn't know that. I didn't know about that. Show more. Yeah.
Yeah, it adds things like what's the template name you're using? Because we always want to make sure the name is there. And template naming gets a little bit buggy. Mm-hmm. There's a hack of saving it to POTX, and then it'll pick up the name of the primary master slide. In the hyperlink base, we always put in a hyperlink base. I actually have no idea where that's used, but we put it in there and specify a company. So we'll put in, so when you expand it, there's all these extra categories.
What's a hyperlink base? Like a URL?
Like a URL. Yeah. Yeah. It
where?
Like Amazon.com. What? I know.
You could do that if you're working for Amazon or whatever. The big ones we look for are the comments, which you could see otherwise. Do they have other comments? We always look for the author. We don't want one of our people being the author. So you can right click and remove the author, remove person. You can also do it if you do. That's why we do the, hold on, I already lost track of the check for issues. The inspect presentation will also strip all these out.
Interesting, Troy. I always make sure that Nolan Hames Creative is the author.
I've used that. I've put for information on this template contact. I haven't put my, you know.
Oh, that would be in the comments area. And we do have like the one I'm looking at right now. It says PowerPoint design, PowerPoint template design by, and it lists our name and our website. Because that's our little tag, but we always make sure it's the client information there. I have a really funny one though. I got a call from a friend of mine. He's like, okay, hey Troy, how would I do this? And it was some, Sandy, you'd really appreciate this. It was some really in-depth hyperlinking scenarios for like a self-running kiosk mode, like a touchscreen thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, these are really crazy deep questions. And they're also sounding like, I'm like, yeah, we just worked on something like that last month. I could tell you exactly how it works. He was actually contracted by a company to modify, because our contract said they had so many revisions. Well, they'd already met their revision quota. They hired another contractor who was working on another project. They just said, hey, while you're at it, could you update this thing? And he, being a great guy, said, sure, let me take a look at it. So well, he got way into it. I mean, this was a really complex, like you shouldn't just throw something into it. It had like layers of links within links and you know, hidden things and groupings. And so he was like, yeah, I looked at the properties and I saw your name in there, you know, your company. So I figured I'd give you a call. I'm like, oh, see, those things can come in handy if you know they're there.
I always look to that to if I get a file to see who created it. But there,
okay.
There's a lot there. You know, we skipped over something at the top left. The very first thing is media size and performance. And this, as far as I can tell, only it says media, but it only applies to video in a file.
Where are you looking?
At the very top left.
Of info?
Right above Protect Presentation.
You must have that in the Mac.
Don't have that.
No, I'm on the PC. That's that.
I have upload, share, copy path, and open file.
And then right below that, you don't have compressed media.
Oh, you know what? I don't have media in this file. Hold on, I'll open it. Yes, you're right. That should be there.
Yeah.
Hold
okay. On. So that's a learning. This will only show up if you have video.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'll dump a video onto this.
Yeah, really, so I did. So that it says media, but it really should say video because media also includes imagery.
It also include audio files.
That's true. Yep. So and so you can set things to full HD, HD 720, 480, and I assume this is only going to down res. I assume it's not going to up res.
Correct.
But it'll show you how much video is taking up space. In this case, like on this file, 73 megs, half my video, my file is taken up with the video.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. You know, we do use that quite a bit. I actually like SlideWise because it now gives you an inspector of mm-hmm. all your media. Yep. But that's a good thing that it doesn't show up unless you have media in the file because I now see it.
Okay. So that's info. Did we cover everything in info pretty much?
There's a lot of stuff in info. And it's a really, like I said, this is like the backstage area where things are kind of hidden away. And I think it's important. The next two down are, I'm just going to cover them together. Save. It actually doesn't lead to another like right-hand menu. You click it, you save the file. Pretty self-explanatory.
I feel like that's a trap door, like in the haunted house. Like it like, oh, I didn't want to leave. And now like, I don't like that.
Yeah. But it doesn't exist when you're on a web-based version because it's save a copy. You know, there is no more save when you're in like OneNote or anything that's based on Teams. You know, they're all, you know, OneDrive, basically. They're all auto-saving as you type. Every keystroke gets saved, so it's kind of funny there. But the Save As does have a separate menu, and it gets pretty complicated. But, you know, you're as soon as you click Save As, the immediate right column says, where do you want to locate it? I have mine set in the options. We're going to talk about at the very bottom. I have mine set to use this computer as the default because PowerPoint out of the box, that's not even a phrase anymore because you download it. Anyways, PowerPoint by default wants you to save it to a cloud-based area.
It does.
And we change that setting to be this computer. And not only this computer, we tell it to be on this computer's desktop so we can find it. But I have a couple of OneDrives. I have a couple of SharePoint sites all listed in there. They're, you know, interesting collection of stuff that accumulates, I'm sure. But then you have over on the right is the file name and a drop-down menu. And I want to call out the drop-down menu because we're going to talk about this when we get to another area here. Under Save As, second tier down, there's a drop-down that lists every type of file format and option you can save a presentation to. That's all I'll say about it. We're going to come back to it later. The new folder is kind of cool. You can actually use that to organize things right on the fly. I always click more options because I inevitably want to save it to a different place than what's already listed. Mm-hmm. And then there's all these names of files that are already there, which I really don't get why they're in the save as area, but they're there. It's kind of like another open.
Good point.
Save as. Moving on. Print.
Okay. Print. Oh, I have, before that, I have save as Adobe PDF, but we can come back to that.
Let's talk about that when we talk about export.
Okay. Let's go to
export
print
is where, because you actually don't see PDF any longer here. You got to, hold that thought. We'll come back to it.
Okay. So if you click on the print tab, it opens up the dialog. Print dialog opens up to your printer that you can select where you want to print it. And included in that is fax, Adobe, PDF, multiple printers. You can print it to OneNote. If you have Snagit installed, you can print it to Snagit, but there are very many options there. You can decide which all or any of the slides that you want. There's a little open slot where you can print, type in the number of the slides that you want to print, the slide number that you want to print.
Now there, once you go to print, you'll get a new print dialog box, which is related to the actual printer, which has even more different options, right? Like, for example, printing. Like printing hidden slides. That's something I do all the time.
Yes.
But you can only do that once you select the printer and go to it.
Right. Okay. I have a call out. I have a request here. I'm just going to throw it out for the whole world to say, hey, this would be a good idea. We should all put this on user voice. Why don't we have presets to hold combinations of these settings? Because like Nolan was saying, you know, you can do all slides or selection, but then the second one down is where you really get it. You know, I need to scale to fit the paper, mm-hmm. or I don't need it to. I want to frame the slides. Why can't I have collections of settings and they're just a little preset of that I created? Anyways, that's just my ask.
I know people who could probably do an add-in for you.
Yeah.
You know, other than saved Adobe presets, PDF presets like in Adobe, I don't think I've ever seen saved print presets in exactly that way. Like you've had saved like page sizes and things like that, mm-hmm. but like collecting all the different options. I'm not sure I've ever seen that anywhere. I mean, maybe it
is. So I will say this one, and because you mentioned PDF, both of you, I find that printing a PDF here is, it's got a big advantage here over the other places, which was save as with that drop-down menu, and we're mm-hmm. going to get to it with export. Here, at least you get a visual preview, and I find that to be very helpful. I wish exporting right. a PDF, you could get a preview of what it is you're actually doing. You know, it'll show you every single page and if the content's there or not. And so that's the live preview in the print menu area here is a huge thing that was put in years ago, but I think it's amazingly helpful.
Right. And that not just for Adobe, but for the printer that you're printing on, wherever you're printing it to, you have a live view of it, which
you're printing to a black and white printer. Have you ever changed the color to grayscale or black and white, pure black and white, so you can see all the hard lines and stuff?
I always do that in PowerPoint.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
So you can do it here and you just can't edit them here, but you can decide like this one I'm looking at, I can tell that the logo was kind of hacked to make it fit this area. Mm-hmm. I could see two extra boxes extending the leader lines on this particular logo to fit the slide. And, you know, I wouldn't want those to print. Yep. Anyways, black and white peer view. I like to do it before we go there.
You can print the format, the print layout. So either full page slides, you can print your note pages, an outline, handouts, which I never use this for handouts. But there are options there for printing for a print layout.
It's a pretty standard print menu, but it's robust and it works pretty good. You get to the printer properties depending on which printer you're doing. But for me, it's all about the preview and the missing combination presets. Got it.
You can also edit your header and footer. That's new. I didn't see that. Like right. So like if you I got to put slide numbers on just for this one print job, you could do that. So that's print. We pretty much cover that. And then we've got another trapdoor below that, which is share. That kind of kicks you back out of Backstage and just gives you a little dialogue where you can now save to, you can share, assuming it's there, you can share it from OneDrive. If you've added Dropbox, you could do that as well, or you can just attach a copy and it'll launch Outlook and you can send email right there. So again, lots of ways to share presentation than that way. Yeah,
that's a good point because everything is multiple ways. I don't think I ever use the share here because now it's on, you know, PowerPoint's put it in the top right hand corner. They want you to use the sharing mechanism in the shared folder of shared ecosystem. So it's like right up there. So I always use it there. I never go to the backstage anymore. Maybe that'll change.
I've never thought of using it there. And so that's a lot less clicks.
It brings up the same little dialogue. Yeah. And unlike like Nolan said, it doesn't surprise you by poof, backstage is gone. You're like, wait a minute.
Right.
Why is this thing in there?
Export. Troy, take export. That's the next one. That's going to be
export,
a big one.
Right? I actually spend a lot of time in export. So this has got so many options. This has got your create PDF XPS. Quick pop quiz. What's XPS, everybody?
What's it stand for?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It stands for Microsoft's own version of fake PDF because PDF didn't want to release PDF.
I knew that.
I knew something legal. I actually can't remember what it is. Extended or another. But it's basically Microsoft's version of saying PDF, and then they finally got the licensing or Adobe finally said, yes, you can use our name or something like that. There's a great story with it, I'm sure. When you click asking a question here, when I click create PDF /XPS document, does the create PDF button in a giant yellow annoying like warning bar?
Yeah,
for you guys,
really ugly yellow. You
know? I don't know why it's that way. I mean, investigate accessibility is in there.
That should be yellow.
Mine is.
Yeah, that's a great thing because I always think I've hit like this warning, like something's gone wrong. I really don't like this decision, but yeah, you know what? The investigate accessibility, that should be the yellow element. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's a new recommendation I will submit.
I'm so sorry. I don't see a big yellow bar.
Oh, really?
Tell me what I'm supposed to be clicking on.
I'm in export. I'm in the backstage export, and then I selected create PDF XPS document, the top button.
Yes.
On the right-hand side, there's a button that says, you know, this is the one that would actually launch the thing to save a PDF. The bar there is in bright yellow. It says, we have recommendations that will make the PDF easier for people with disabilities to read. Investigate it. You know, it's an accessibility thing because the bright contrast to yellow, the accessibility group got a hold of this button. You don't see it as a bright yellow band?
I have seen that bar in the past, but right now on my screen, I don't have it. So I wonder if because I've used it before, it's...
No, I use this all the time. It's this.
I don't have it.
Okay. Well, moving past that, create a video is where we really wanted to go because this is one of my favorite tools. When PowerPoint finally put this in place, I got rid of a bunch of other software. This is amazing. It is a frame accurate video rendering of your presentation, and in addition, they've now added it so you can go up to 4K. So it's pretty useful. The narrations thing, the timing, there's a lot of settings in there, but create video is probably one of the bigger features I think PowerPoint has put in the past decade that have really extended its use. The new one is create animated GIFs. You guys ever do that? First of all, is it GIF or GIF?
GIF.
Say GIF.
Okay. Graphics. I'm a GIF. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I think the GIFs are really, really cool. They are a bit on the large file size, I find, but great feature. I mean, this is one of the newer features in there. Okay, this one's really funny to me. Package presentation for CD.
Oh, funny.
Daddy, what's a CD?
I may have used this in 2007 the last time.
I definitely used this back in 20 years ago in the agency days. Yeah.
I don't know why that's
still when you
there.
Had to like, that's when videos weren't embedded. They were always linked. And so
Executable files.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, it created an EXE and it did, but it actually gathered all the linked files and put them into a single folder. I used it. That's probably what I used it for. I wonder if it would still do it now because there's so few linked files. I don't know. Anyways, create handouts. Does anybody use create handouts built Microsoft's version?
Not here, Sandy. Haven't you used that?
No, I use send. Yes, but it's so weird. I'm so used to calling it send to Word. But yes, I use it.
Oh, that's the old name. Yeah. Yes,
I use it all the time. I bet I use it daily.
Wow. Yeah.
But it is so bad. It's so awful.
We should probably, that's a good conversation we could have because like, no, I don't know. I actually print a PDF and then we import the PDF into a preset InDesign document that, you know, just populates.
That's what I do if I have to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's smart. That's smart.
Okay. So remember when I said under save as, I was going to come back to that drop down list, the one below this is change file type. Have you guys ever clicked on this button?
Never. I'm looking at it now. And
all it is a simplified version of the dropdown that's in the save as menu, but it doesn't even give you all the other options, but right. It gets better. Save as another file type. It just takes you. Wait, why didn't it not do it? Oh, because it opens up. Anyway, you end up making the exact same list. I think this is maybe I'm talking like just kind of out of turn here. I think this is maybe put in by the touch interface people, because they're such nice big buttons and stuff.
Visual.
But yeah. It's so clunky and unneeded, in my opinion. And then do you guys have published to Microsoft Stream as part of your list?
I do not. Mm-mm.
Okay. No. That would be, so there's another one in the export, because I can actually publish any of my presentations. It's basically save as a video, but it puts it directly onto Microsoft Stream, which is a great service if you live in a corporate bubble, because it doesn't work outside a bubble, basically. But right. I have published Microsoft Stream. Okay, there's the export menu. And the next, oh, Nolan, take us down to, or Sandy, take us down another trapdoor, a ghost house trapdoor. Okay. Is that what you called it?
Yeah. Okay, before I even say the word, don't click on this one. Okay. Don't click on the close tab right now. Okay. I'm almost in myself, will. Right? It will close the file that you're in.
That's accurately named.
Yes, okay. It is.
Just for reference, the keyboard command for that is Control W. I never go into the backstage to close an individual file.
Okay, let's move on. So actually the middle set that we just went through, info through close, those are only available if you actually have a file open. So, I mean, you can't save out something if you don't have a file open, but the home, new, and open, and the last three where we're going to talk about, those you can actually set preferences and things on even without any files open. So the first one is account. Kind of partly self-explanatory. This is your Microsoft account information, basically shows you who's signed in. So if you need to switch, if you have multiple 365 accounts or whatever, you can switch them there. You can also, you've got some privacy settings with, like, you know, are you sending data to Microsoft, all that kind of stuff. You can set your office background. If you didn't know that for some bizarre reason. Yes.
Sandy, what's your office background set to? You got to say what's listed there. Come on. I know you're going to say the flowery something.
Yeah, but no background.
I have no background, Troy.
Okay, I do not have a no background for me as well.
But you can set it to lunchbox or stars or straws. And all it does. Okay, I'm going to leave mine on doodle circles. All right, moving on. You can set your office theme, and I believe this will set it globally for all of your Microsoft.
Unless it's
actually, I find that as a problem. I wish it was per app, because I would use black, but black in Outlook is horrible to me. I can't work in Outlook.
Here.
It's too glaring. But I use black on all of our show computers are set to black because we're in a backstage environment and it works really great. We, you know, tone the monitors down. I have mine set to dark gray. How about you two?
Colorful.
Really?
I am not. Now I don't like dark mode in anything. I really, really don't. I'm very old school in that.
Even
I like
Adobe my light, products?
Yep. I like my light gray. I don't like dark gray. I don't. Okay. Can't explain it.
I'm
just a little side note. Just today I was reading an email as I was flicking through everything. Well, okay. So I was doing presenter rehearsals, online rehearsals, and, you know, they're doing their setup. So I'm looking through my email. AIGA's, I think it's the AIGA newsletter. They had an article, the history of dark mode. It was
okay.
You know, basically, I mean, it's a thing. Like, dark mode had to evolve for.
People love it. It's just not a thing for me.
I use dark gray. That's my preset for all of Office. I would use black and PowerPoint and dark gray for everything else if I had the option.
It's, I don't know, dark gray and olives. I don't like either of them. So. Okay.
I use dark
gray. You've got connected services. And this, Sandy, is this where you can add Dropbox? Because I've never been able to add Dropbox.
Well, what's funny is I don't see it here in the connected services.
Yeah, it's.
But I. So I can't.
No,
remember.
You have to do it under the other one. And once you do it in the other one, it shows up here as well. I'm pretty sure.
Certain, all right.
That's, pretty certain.
That's just been frustrating. Anyway, so and over on the right, you've got a whole bunch of information about your account. You can manage it, change the license, blah, blah, blah. Your
updates. Yep.
Your updates. Yeah. So you can, update now, your disable updates, all that kind of stuff. And then below that, this is where you can opt into your what Microsoft calls your channel. There's Office Insider there. So if you click change channel, what they're calling it today, they keep changing the names of this, but you have, I guess, office beta channel or preview channel. It's I'm looking at it right now, and there used to be
so three. I just term it this way. It's stable, cool, but maybe not stable, and really cool, but probably not stable.
Now,
by the way, if you're on a corporate account like I am, you don't get that option because that has to be set by your IT admin in the Office 365 back office area. So I don't have an option to change it here.
Yeah,
I can.
Well, I only
like you do because you're on a you're on the individual plan, I think.
Yeah, so it's very confusing the way they've done it here. It used to be three options. Now it's like three, but it's in different. You have to first check and then do current channel preview or beta. I'm sorry, preview channel or beta channel. Mm-hmm. And it's very anyway, but
there are three levels: stable, sort of stable, maybe not stable.
Okay, then you've got about PowerPoint. If anybody's ever like, what version are you? What build are you on? Or what license? Or what session ID do you have? And you're like, I don't know. Here's where you can find out and copy all that information down.
Take a screen capture of this and submit it with any troubleshooting. It'll save a lot of information because it's very confusing. I'm on version 2008, although I'm using Office 365 and 2020.
Exactly. And then another trapdoor below is what's new, which will kick you out and give you your sidebar, which supposedly will tell you what's new, but they don't keep that. All that up to date. All right. So that
Wait, hold on. I got to bring this one up. This is like pro tip. If PowerPoint isn't working, like, hey, it won't display. Well, okay, display is a whole problem right now. But hey, this suddenly isn't working or this, that. First step, go to the backstage, go to account, go to update options and see if there's office updates. I personally am finding, and this is for a fleet of 50 plus computers, every time there's an update, it tends to break something until you update it. It's like kind of forces you to say you will update because I won't cooperate until you do. We do updates probably weekly on every computer. Office updates.
There you go. So that's account. And then feedback below is a fairly quick one. That's a big waste of space here. But you've got your frowns, your smiles, send a suggestion to PowerPoint. And just so people know, like, PowerPoint actually reads these. Sometimes we're going back and forth and they log them and everything. So sometimes we're going back and forth with the development team at Microsoft and they'll literally just say, send a frown or send a smile or something because that gets it in the system. They see it. They can now see that, you know, 1,000 people are having this problem and you can get responses too. So if you, again, if something's not working, think about sending a frown.
Wait, I got to make a comment on this one too. So here you get the send a smile, send a frown. In the upper right, you see the little frown and little smile.
Right.
When you're not in the backstage, you only see a send a smile. I just want you to know this. Like they're encouraging you to say it. But if you click send a smile, it will also send a frown. Just so you know, if you're in PowerPoint, you can click that smiley to send a I don't like this anytime. But I think it's a psychologist got involved in that one. Like, okay, if you just change it to a smile only, people will always think you're good.
And send a suggestion will actually take you right to User Voice. We'll launch a browser. This is, I don't know if User Voice is, I think it's a third party company, right? But a lot of companies use it. And if you want a feature request, like don't yell at us, don't, you know, post it on, I don't know, message board, go to User Voice because genuinely Microsoft reads that. Okay. So that is feedback. Troy, why don't you take options, which we're at about.
Okay. Here's what we're going to do.
Here's the deep dive.
This is where really, really techie stuff happens. I mean, this is the behind the scenes settings for everything for time and not becoming a soundtrack that puts everyone to sleep. We're going to basically skip over these options, but really quick in the options are general PowerPoint settings. We have about 9 different things we change in here on every one of our computers. We get a fresh install. Proofing settings, which are kind of interesting. Save settings are kind of a good thing. We actually modify a few of those. Language options are, this is a good place to go. If you suddenly get a presentation where everything's underlined, you can change the language temporarily and fix it. Ease of access settings. You know, my biggest tip about this is go in there. There's some things you probably don't want turned on. Advanced, which leads to even more PowerPoint settings. There's the customized ribbon. There's the customized ribbon, which is super important. It's also super geeky. The quick access toolbar, just download. Nolan, you have one, don't you? I have a preset QAT. Yeah. Just go to my blog and type QAT. Go to Nolan's and type QAT. It'll be an instant download. It'll take you 30 seconds. You'll be done. Okay, add-ins. This is super confusing. it is where you turn on and off add-ins that are already installed. So you can have add-ins installed on your computer and you can temporarily turn them off in here. It's a little confusing because there's actually two types of add-ins, but there's three types of ways to get three directory options, but that's it. The Trust Center is super geeky, but if an add-in does not work or you cannot open something, it's probably a setting in this area, in this Trust Center, that's creating the problem. IT people hate you getting into this one because it's also the area where you can say, I trust everything. Let loose the virus-ridden picture file in my presentation. So anyways, there's a lot going on in options. That's like a total separate conversation. We actually have a 3-page document of how we set up all of our computers because you can't preset them. They all are manual clicks. Good stuff to get into, but I'm saying for conversation time, we avoid it. Sandy, take us somewhere else.
Oh, we're done. I'm just going to take you back to your slide presentation in the.
Oh, wait, how do you get out of the, how do you get to your slide, Sandy? Exactly. This is always a great question.
The upper left-hand corner, there is a left-facing arrow. You click on that and you're back.
And you're back.
Unless you use one of the trap doors.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Or click your heels. So that's it. So I think in a future episode, we might explore some things in the advanced options. Troy, I'm very curious to know the 9 things that you always change. So I think we can explore some things in there in the future because it's definitely an even deeper dive than we have time for now. On the Mac, I just want to sort of cover that. You just don't have the same sort of interface. You don't have the backstage. Really, all you have is PowerPoint preferences, which you get to from the PowerPoint file menu in PowerPoint. And then you've got a nice sort of visual, you know, it's like Mac preferences, basically. You've got nice little visual icons where you've got, you know, general, there's not much there. You've got different views. Each one of these has very little in it. You do have the quick access toolbar. And the ribbon customization. You've got like an edit menu for like cut and paste options, proofing, autocorrect. You do have a couple of save options like auto, like recovery. These are sort of the deep dive preferences. Then some personal settings where you can set like user information and security. But yeah, PowerPoint really does not, on the Mac does not have a fraction of all the different options you have on the PC. But that's the Mac nature to keep things simple, right?
Absolutely. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but it does keep it simple.
Yes.
Okay, well, I think we've just covered a ton of geeky stuff. Let's kind of do a quick wrap up. Well, that wraps up another in-depth documentary on PowerPoint, this time looking at the mysteries of the backstage. Okay, folks, you don't know it, but I just did like 2 takes. I had to get a good voice for that. We had a ton of fun, really. We did talking with everyone about the behind the scenes features and functions and frustrations of PowerPoint. Thank you for having us enlighten part of your day. Don't press stop just yet. We have some fantastic pro and tech tips coming up next.
All right, so let's do some pro and tech tips. I'm going to dive in. I've got this amazing little Mac app. Now, there is a PC version of it built, put out by the same people. We'll put links in it, but it's primarily, it works much better, and it's clearly the developers liked it more on the Mac. It's called Webcam Settings App. You can get it in the Apple Store. It's $7.99, I think. What it allows you to do is while you're using your webcam and even the built-in cam, doesn't have to be an external cam, like if you have one built into your iMac, whatever program you're using, whether it's Zoom or Camtasia or whatever, you open this little helper app and it lets you set white balance, zoom, sometimes panning, all sorts of different settings that you don't have access to usually in Zoom, for example. So if your camera's too dark in Zoom, you can't do anything about it. This little app will allow you to change it on the fly.
Oh my gosh, that is really cool.
It's amazing. Plus, it has presets too. So you can set a Zoom level for one camera and a different Zoom level for another. It has different cameras, whatever camera you have. It's fantastic. I use it all the time when I'm like on Zoom. I'm like, I'm a little too dark. Let me fix it. Or, you know, I want to change my Zoom level a little bit. It's allowed me to be able to cut out, like a lot of webcams are very wide So it's allowed me to sort of zoom in and cut those out a little bit. So it's called It's called Webcam Settings App. It looks much nicer on the Mac, but they do have a PC version. I don't think it's quite as nice, but you can still do a lot of the same things.
So have you tried the PC version as well? Or are you just reviewing?
I have tried the PC version. And again, it's not quite as full featured or nice.
Oh, shucks. Okay.
Okay. That's really cool. Cause ironically, I'm going to talk about a camera app as well, but I didn't know that there was options like that. Cause when we're in our virtual studios, we lose a lot of those functionalities. I actually don't know how to access a lot of them, like Microsoft Teams. You don't have camera setting options.
Nope.
And I have the Logitech ones, but they don't seem to work. So if this would override it and work with it when it's within a Teams meeting, that'd be great. I'm going to look into this, even though it's the Windows version. I'll give you a report back next time.
Okay.
So what I'm going to talk about, my pro and tech tip, I have been using the Microsoft camera app. Actually, what do they call it? The reason I have this as a good tip is because we're all in this virtual world. Hold on, I'm looking down. I'm going to type camera into my... Yeah, it's literally just called camera app. It's the little 35 millimeter DSLR camera. So this is a great tool for if you want to see what your webcam setup is going to look like before you hop onto a conference call. You know, you don't want to load Zoom or whatever. We type in the camera app, open it up because it's a nice big display and it lets you see what your camera is and, you know, adjust the sizing. I may be using this in combination with the webcam settings app you just talked about, Nolan. I'm going to download that shortly. The other thing it can do is you can actually use it for recording. It's a great tool for taking a video of, you know, clips of, you know, narration pieces. And it does, one of the things it does not do well is help you out with your microphone. So you actually have to, because when you go into its settings, it's all about the camera, which doesn't include your microphone. It's only about the visual. So photos or video, you still have to go into your, you know, right click on the little speaker icon, go to sound settings to get to troubleshoot your microphone. But we use this a lot lately, like a lot. Mm-hmm. And then we'll also do, like when I'm testing out a new microphone for this, instead of opening up a more robust Adobe program, I'll just record a video clip of myself talking into the microphone and see if I like it or the distance or like I have a new little pop filter screeny thing on this one. I tested it out that way. So I do like Microsoft's built-in camera app, but it does video as well. So that was my little tip.
Well, I'm focusing on the audio part of it. You guys focused on the visual. I'll do audio. I was becoming increasingly frustrated with my effort to be cool and hip and use Bluetooth for my webinar audio. You know, it was getting to be such a problem switching over. So my Bluetooth earbuds are going to be phone use only. I ended up purchasing a wired headset, the Jabra Evolve 40. UC professional wired headset. I got the what do you call it? Mono speaker.
Going old school. Listening.
Yeah, I am going old school. Plugged in, wired. It's always going to be there, so I can have something that's reliable. It's too stressful jumping from meeting to meeting, switching web programs. You know, if someone wants me to be on Zoom, and the next person I'm on Teams. Sometimes that audio doesn't make that transition very well. So I'm going to go hard and I love it. I love what I've done so far. Maybe I don't look as hip as I would with my Surface earbuds.
It looks comfy. It looks comfortable.
Yeah, it's very comfy. I'm very happy with it so
far. And it's just one ear, not two ears.
One ear, right. I didn't want to have both of my ears covered.
I get that. Is it USB or is it an analog eighth inch plug?
It's both. It's got a 35 millimeter jack and a USB.
3.5 millimeter. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, also eighth inch for those of us that are American. Okay. Yeah. We use these all the time. Obviously for the podcast, I use a little more robust, you know,
right.
This, but we use the 1 year over the year and we're making this, it's actually on our recommended equipment list for everybody that's doing all these conferences. We're like, you should probably do this. It's worth it.
Sandy, you said USB and eighth inch jack. Is it two cords? How does that work?
Oh my gosh. I've only plugged in the jack, so I haven't even tried it. I don't even know. And I don't have it right here with me right now.
It looks like it comes with an audio adapter.
Yes.
So okay. It's going to run a USB audio adapter into, this looks really comfortable. Oh, I do like the busy light, you know, a little side light that says, hey, I'm actually on a call or doing something. I wonder if you could just turn that on all the time, just so people just think you're busy.
There you go. I thought the price was reasonable. I you know, for something high quality, yeah. $95.
There's only 12 left in stock, according to my Amazon.
Oh, yeah, list. Right. What do I have? Do I have 12 left in stock, the one I'm on?
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Hey, let's wrap it up. Thanks, guys. This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a professional presentation design agency. Check us out at tlccreative.com. I have a blog, thepowerpointblog.com. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/TLC Creative Services, which shows a lot of times when we were busy traveling around the world doing stuff. And look forward to hearing from you.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. You can get lots of free stuff there. And if you're interested in training remote, give us a call.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwiz.biz, the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org, and I'm also on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and on Twitter as @PPTWiz. And just one final reminder, we still have the SlideWise contest open. So send a screenshot of your reviews to info@thepresentationpodcast.com to enter for a chance to win one of 5 SlideWise licenses.
Also through the podcast website, you can contact us with episode suggestions, comments, or questions for the hosts. It would be great if you'd mention us, leave a review, and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or Spotify. And please, let other designers know about us. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services Incorporated. New episodes release on the first and third Tuesday of each month.